Mentioned to you before that we are working our way through a series of in-betweenness. And it's not just, you know, because that sounds like a cool thing to do for Lent. It's because Jesus is in the work, in the business of helping us kind of think through and redefine even the fundamental realities that we take for granted. The song that Willis just played is based upon this wonderful hymn. Did anybody recognize that? Grace, grace, God's grace, right? And so we follow Jesus to kind of move through how we understand life. We have this model, this pioneer and perfecter of faith in Jesus Christ, who is saying, let's look at this, let's work through this together. And so in working through these kind of dualities, these different categories that we'll be talking about, we're following Jesus into a conversation in all these different ways over these next few weeks. Today, we're going to maybe deal with one of the most difficult ones, the most tender ones, which is the polarity between stranger and neighbor. Who is my neighbor? Now, a lawyer comes up to Jesus. It's like, hey, Jesus, how you doing? And I don't know if he said how you doing or not, but he walks up to Jesus with the idea that he's going to test what is happening in Jesus's worldview and understanding. And so in the midst of all that, he says, how do I live? What's the way that I should be? How should I live? And Jesus is smart enough, wise enough to say, well, what do you find in the scriptures? Where do you root yourself in? And wisely, the lawyer says, well, you shall love the Lord your God with everything you have, all your heart, mind, soul, strength. Love God with everything. If you look at the Old Testament, if you go back to the Ten Commandments, the two places that those are written, first one, you shall have no other God before me. Don't put idols there. Don't put golden, craven images of some human idea. Don't violate this. But also, you know, give me your heart. Give me your heart and your mind and your soul and your strength. Give me everything. And the lawyer says, in one smooth kind of expression, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and you will love your neighbor as yourself. That's from right in the Old Testament as well. The value of the neighbor makes a difference. And so there's those three, not two, those three. You should love God with everything you have. You should love your neighbor, and guess what? You get to be thrown into that mix as well, right? So it's okay to have a loving regard for your life. Your life is a gift, right? So as much as you saying happy birthday to me, and thank you for that. I hope people sing happy birthday to you because you are precious. You have been given this amazing gift of life. And you're so valuable. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. So that intrigues the lawyer enough for him to say, so, exactly who is my neighbor? Now, this is in the fine Jewish legal tradition of how do you draw limits around some things, right? Because obviously, you know, right now there are, 8 billion people in the world? That's a lot of neighbors, right? Can you imagine the block party that would be? So you have lots of people around you. So, of course, there has to be limits, right? You can't have 8 billion people over for chicken wings, right? It's a little much. Or it might be a little much to kind of think like, well, I could be hospitable to even them or those or that. Who is my neighbor? In another place in the Gospels, there is a wonderful conversation about a dinner party. This same thing comes up. Who is my neighbor? Who do I get to invite? Who should I not invite? Right? Because there's some people you don't want coming to your dinner party, right? The ones that leave Cheeto crumbs on the floor, you don't want them. The ones who plow through all the napkins with the barbecue sauce, you don't want those people. Or worse. In fact, you don't want to be seen eating with some people because that would be dragging you down. If I eat with some people, that means I'm kind of like them. And then if I'm like them, then what does that say about me? So the lawyer is practicing good law. How do we quantify this, Jesus? What do you say about this? The what ifs, right? So Jesus says, let me tell you a story. And then he works his way through what we know of as the parable of the Good Samaritan. Although sometimes this is described as the parable, the story of the man that was beat up and thrown in a ditch. Kind of depends on your point of view of your understanding of that. This is an unsettling parable. This parable, this story that Jesus tells, is really kind of ugly to the people that are hearing it at the time. The original hearers largely would have been Jews and would have been hanging on the words of what Jesus is saying to answer the question about who is my neighbor, but they also would have been shocked. So we've heard this so many times that we've seen it in Sunday school, and it's this kind of glorious sort of, and you know, the Samaritan puts that on broken person on his donkey, and there's like this, you know, kind of nice image of that. But for Jewish folks, that was a subset of Judaism that had lost their way and their faith, and you don't mess with these people. You don't engage with these people. These are the wrong kind of people. Those are the very lowest of what we say that we are as humans, as Jews, because they lost their way. Pigs. It would have been that bad. Now, Jesus does the work of the theater of the mind. You know, he gives us this story. We have to kind of like layer in our imagination. But the first thing he tells us about is this road. This is an actual photograph of the contemporary Jericho Road. It is a long and winding 17 miles, and it drops over 3,000 feet in elevation. It's got a steep decline going down to Jericho. And there's lots of twists and turns. And you can see, it's hard to see in this image, but there's lots of twists and turns and places where it would be easy for someone to kind of pop out from behind a bush or, you know, down a hill and to take advantage of a traveler as they were going through. So it's not uncommon. It's not uncommon, even on this common commute between those two locations, for thieves to jump in. This is a story that those first hearers would have understood really well. There's danger on that road. But it was also a common commute for some people, especially for priests and Levites who could not afford to live in Jerusalem. They would have to kind of come from those places that they were coming from, head down this road, and then return home after a trip to the temple. That was their requirement to do. Though it was common, it was dangerous, and it was filled with bandits. So we have this story of this man who is making his way down this road. He is seized upon by robbers and bandits. They beat him up. They strip him of his clothes, And the scriptures say that he was half dead. I don't know which half was dead. That's kind of like being half pregnant. But you know, he was on his way to being gone. So it just happens that there is this Levite who's making his way, and then there's a priest, they're making their way. They see this, they look at it, and not doing this. I can understand this in some ways. The Jewish law says you don't have anything to do with dead things. All right, so if there's blood involved, or if there's a death, there's a certain amount of ritual that you have to go through even just to be cleansed from that encounter. So you see something, and it's like, oh, I don't want to. Particularly for the priest, it would have been, oh, gosh. So suddenly, even though the priest, you know, we have to look at that priest and go, dude, why didn't you help? You can actually kind of, if you think about it, spend some time sort of taking that point of view. In fact, there's all kinds of different points of view that you can assume in this. I mean, imagine yourself to be the Levite who looks at the priest going right on by. Perhaps the point of view that you might find yourself in is that of the lawyer who is waiting for the answer to his question. Lots of people find themselves in the point of view of the man that's laying in the ditch, hoping for rescue, looking up in despair. And to the surprise of that person is the very kind of person that you wouldn't have imagined to stop. In fact, much to your surprise, perhaps if you are looking at this from that point of view, is him. Really? You? Now, I've been in trouble before, and I have found that the people that have come to my aid and my rescue have been surprising people. I told you about a car accident I had one time, not terribly long ago. I told you about that. The accident was years ago, but the man who saved me, who pulled me out of my vehicle, which was upside down and still running at the time, I was hanging by my seatbelt. The man that saved me was the man I almost hit, right? And a man who looked like he had, you know, kind of seen some rough days. But never have I seen such a beautiful face. So imagine, kind of own where you might find yourself in that point of view that you would take. Perhaps a robber, perhaps the people overhearing the story. Now, in his last speech before being assassinated, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King spoke about this very story. King had visited the Jericho Road in 1959, and he saw its twists and turns, and how it wound through the hills and sank into the valley outside of Jerusalem. And along the way were so many potential hiding places that robbers could lie in wait, ready to ambush travelers. He looked at that. He stood there, and he looked at that. King talks about that, and then he says, I'm going to tell you what my imagination tells me, like I just engaged you with. I'm going to tell you what my imagination tells me about the priest and the Levite. He said, it is possible those men were afraid. Perhaps, he suggested, they fearfully asked themselves, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? You don't mess with dead things. You don't mess with blood. Maybe this is a trap. Maybe this is going to be bad for me. If I stop and help, what will happen to me? The Good Samaritan, King said, reversed that question. If I do not stop to help this man, what will happen to him? And then he urged his listeners to imagine themselves on contemporary Jericho roads. Could they, would they, ask the same question when they saw others struggling? If I do not stop to help this man, what will happen to him? Have you ever been in a situation where fear kept you from helping someone? Do you empathize with the priest and the Levite or see yourself in them? Have you ever been surprised to look up from your need and see someone completely unexpected, perhaps someone that there was a boundary that you shouldn't cross? As a community, could we look at our church and our ministries and say that we are emulating all these actions for neighbors in our own midst? Are we asking, if we don't do something, what will happen to them? I'm going to tell you a story, and I want you to hear the story with the intention that this is not a story I'm telling to make me look good, okay? Although it's hard not for this to look good. Thank you for laughing at that. I want you to hear the story from the perspective of the truth, which is I often get it wrong. I try, and I'm trying my best to be a follower and friend of Jesus, but there are times that my own fear or my own blindness or my own indifference or my own kind of selfishness or self-concern kind of gets in the way, all right? But I wanted to tell you a story about this very story. So years ago, when I was in another parish, I spent time part-time as a chaplain in a psychiatric hospital, which was enormously wonderful. And I'm so glad I had this experience. And so every Wednesday night, I would go and I would work at the hospital and I would have services, right? So I would have, at the time, two worship services. They would be large gathering of inpatient psychiatric patients. And we would work our way through life, through that perspective, through the perspective of faith. And so one night I was spending time with folks talking about this story, telling this story. And then we finished out our night together. I got in my car and started driving home. I'm driving home, and it's kind of a dark sort of country road where my house was. And there's a large kind of four lane that you have to travel to get to that. So it's kind of a dark four lane road, and I'm driving down the road and I see somebody. It's night. I see somebody up in the distance, and he's moving down the road, and I'm a little worried about him because he's awfully close to the road. So I slow down and look at him, and there he is. He's wearing a t-shirt and he has no shoes on. All right, so he's barefoot. He's not dressed for the weather. It was about in the 30s, about kind of what we've been experiencing. And he has no shoes on. And he's running. He's running down the road barefoot, poorly dressed, obviously in a spot. And I look at him, and I'm driving, of course, so I kind of make my way past him. I don't know this person. I didn't get a look fully at, all I saw was the state that he was in. And inside me, the Holy Spirit said, "You need to turn around." And I said, "I don't want to." And the Holy Spirit said, what about all this business about loving your neighbor? And I said, that could be a dangerous person. Obviously, something's going on because he's got no shoes on. And the Lord worked with me up until the point where I got to the first U-turn. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll go back and just look at him. I'll just go look. So I make my U-turn, and I come back around, and I'm driving by, and there he is running, you know, barefoot T-shirt, running guy. And so I make it back to the other U-turn, and I'm pulling up, and I call up my wife. I call my wife, Gina Anderson Cloud, and I said, I want you to know what I am doing. And I want you to stay on the phone with me, please, so that you know what's going on. And if something needs to happen to help, then you would know. And of course, she's cross and giving me lots of instruction in the midst of this. But I'm like, I'm doing this. And so I pull up to him. You know, I get in front of him. He kind of runs up to me, and I'm like, can I help you? And he starts speaking to me, but in Spanish. Now, my Spanish is horrible. Some of you know this and have seen me in action with that. And so I start speaking back to him as best I can. And then Gina, who's on the phone still with me, says, Bert, you're speaking French to him. And my French is terrible too, you know, but it's better than my Spanish, of course. And so I'm doing my best. And somehow we figured out that he needed to go and that I could take him home. I'm like, let me take you home. So he gets in the car. He's shivering. Crank up the heat. I'm trying to talk to him. We're trying to communicate with each other. And he's giving me directions. So he gives me directions down the road just a little bit. And there was a grocery store warehouse. And then in behind that warehouse was a trailer park that was largely an immigrant community. And, you know, folks who were working there in the community. And I had never known that until he took me back there. There are immigrant communities, sometimes very open, very clear, and then there are, particularly in some of our southern rural areas, there are entire communities that are hidden for a reason. And this one was. So there's a trailer park. Pulled in the trailer park. He pointed to a particular trailer. I got him there. Big smile. Because he was home. He was home. And he would be safe. And he would get some shoes. I tried to bless him in the way I could. He reached into his pocket, pulled out his wallet, opened it up to me. I blessed him. And it went on. Now, that could have gone lots of different ways. I know this. But it went the right way. And in the power of God's Spirit, saying, this is the right thing to do, I'm so glad I was kind of willing to follow Jesus into that. I was smart about it. I had someone on the phone. My wife would have been all over that. And a heartbeat. But I follow Jesus into that. I think I'm the better for it. If I do not turn around and help him, what will happen to him? I want to say one other thing here. There is a really bad idea that is starting to make its way around Christian circles that is driven in part by selfishness. And that is the belief that compassion and empathy is a sin. That looking after or feeling concern for the needs of others is wrong. How can someone hear the words of Jesus and say that? I don't know. Because part of the most fundamental thing that we do when we follow Jesus is we open our hearts in love to other people, in spite of who they may be, or what they may be, or what we think they are. If I don't help him, what will happen to him? Jesus asks. And you'll be asked to. And I invite this to you. I invite you to this. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.